For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website.
Well, good morning, dragon beings. Those in the cloud, I'm very sorry I'm not facing you directly, but somehow my computer was requiring something I could not offer
it. There is that big one.
It's okay.
Thanks. Okay.
Yeah. Don't worry too much.
Okay.
Yeah. We'll be fine. Thank you so much for sitting together on this kind of nice sitting, little cool, little gray, little breezy. Let's see, I don't think anyone online is here for the first time. I don't think anyone is quite here, but Leo's pretty new, so welcome. Sai's now a regular. Sunday morning, Bodhisattva. So, as I like to say, in the dirt, on the ground, and in the cloud, we come together and create this single practice body, flowing with the waves of the ocean of reality, flowing in nowness. I think it is no secret that our country will vote for a new leader, a new president on Tuesday. Some have already voted. Almost half the country, it seems. And we'll have online sitting Wednesday morning, online sitting Tuesday morning, in-person sitting Wednesday evening. And I'll be available as needed, especially in person before and after Wednesday evening. And we also have Sesshin next Sunday. So I think that we're in a good position to support each other, whatever the outcome. In the Buddhaverse, the Buddha universe, but it's a Buddha multiverse, Buddha fractalverse, there's a general motto, shall I say? Of kindness and compassion first. So whatever the vote, in the Buddhaverse, the vote is for well-being and kindness for all beings. It's a vote for liberation or freedom from hatred and division. The small mind. We don't get rid of the small mind. We want to liberate it so that it has a wide perspective. So it's not tunnel visioned, but actually has 360 peripheral vision or whatever else dimensions there might be. In our human world of what appears to be arising right now, many of us have been trying to fulfill our bodhisattva vows to free all beings through encouraging people to do something like just vote, you know, kind of simple. Just participate with us in this community event called an election. And I wanted to mention that Tigan, who I don't think is here today, but I don't think he'll mind me revealing, that Tigan, our emeritus teacher, has been supporting Buddhist election retreats. And some of us have attended these. Some of us have supported them in various ways. Our friends at Milwaukee Zen Center have been supporting these retreats. And Tigan's been offering encouraging words to the retreatants who are gathering for these election sessions, I think in Wisconsin and Nevada. So they sit zazen in the morning, get up from the cushion, and go door knocking to get up the vote, get out the vote. And before they leave, I think they receive some dharma and from many different teachers. But Tigan has enthusiastically now liberated maybe from all the administrative responsibilities that fell to someone else. He's gave 5 Dharma talks to this group. And they were words of encouragement on the Bodhisattva practices called the Paramitas: generosity, patience, ethical conduct, enthusiasm, meditation, and wisdom. And these talks will be, you can link to them somehow through our website. I'm not exactly sure, but if you look at Ancient Dragon, you can find them. I'm sure they're great. Many of us have participated in election retreats or written postcards to get out the vote, or done text banking or phone banking, or are doing poll watching or donated money. You know, we all have been using our best judgment and available resources to support the well-being of all being at this particular moment in our land, to protect democracy, to promote peace and justice without furthering division and harm. Well, we don't need these great beings are numberless, we vow to free them, vows which seem impossible, but at times it can seem impossible to care for the world without creating more division. But this is our work. I think we're all hoping for the best. We might even think we know what that is. We might have a fairly good guess. I think all of us are more or less bewildered and saddened by the division in our country. That sometimes masquerades as freedom. So I will encourage all of us to stick to the present moment. Set aside distractions and fears. Let go of ideas of gain and loss. Do not be devoted to us and them thinking. Be devoted to the real dragon, whatever that is. Life as it is right in front of us right now, not our cherished collection of ideas, our glass menageries. So this presidential election to me seems to be at a point of maximal uncertainty. And we all know that uncertainty and ambiguity can be destabilizing for us humans, probably for all critters. The result is often fear and distress, even for like great experienced meditators. You know, 40 plus years of zazen go right out the window when that little fear button is pushed by ambiguity or uncertainty. And although it is weird, it seems true to me that ambiguity and uncertainty are great conditions, are a great time to turn towards the mystery and the support of zazen. Isn't it so nice to sit together this morning without looking at the latest newsflash, you know, just be with what is, to be reminded that there is some spaciousness and connection in this world. So ambiguity and uncertainty are also conditions of maximum possibility. Max ambiguity and max uncertainty train us to live in the present and connects us to the wisdom of ambiguity, the wisdom of don't knowing. This don't knowing of our great ancestor Bodhidharma, Bodhidharma Daisho. So almost everyone probably has heard this story, so I apologize for bringing it up at this time. But some of you may remember this old story. You know, Bodhidharma was said to have brought Zen from India, you know, after walking, I guess, for 3 years to China. I don't know, 400 or 500 of the Common Era, around that time. Buddhism was already in China at that time when Bodhidharma made his journey. I have no idea what possessed such insanity. But nonetheless, as people on journeys, such as hobbits, you know, he ended up in China and in the home of an emperor, in the presence of an emperor of China, who was called Emperor Wu, who was supposedly a Buddhist, not Zen yet. And Emperor Wu was very proud of his Buddhist practice and his many acts of generosity and the support he gave to monasteries and temples. He was sort of a zealot, you might say. So when he met Bodhidharma, he was thrilled to be able to say, talk of his achievements supporting Buddhist practice, like a major donor, you know. And he also appeared to be fishing for a little praise, you know, from Bodhidharma. But instead, Bodhidharma was trying to teach our way to this great emperor. The emperor said, "I've built and endowed many temples. I've supported the monks and their practice. What is my merit? What's my return on investment here?" And Bodhidharma replied, "No merit at all. Zip." The emperor sends like, "What is this person? Who is this? Tell me then, what is the most important thing in the Dharma, in Buddhist teaching? What's the most important teaching, let's say?" And Bodhidharma says, "Vast emptiness, nothing holy, nothing sacred." The emperor maybe was a little irked and goes, "Who is this confronting me?" to Bodhidharma. And Bodhidharma says, "I don't know." Kind of ends the situation there. Walks away. But we are Bodhidharma, and we are also the emperor. All this effort of our wonderful Dragon Sattva Sangha to benefit our world, all the postcards written, all the fretting about the future of democracy in America, all the money donated, you know, no merit, nothing holy. Kind of doubt if any of the candidates said that to the billionaires who were offering little donations, more money than I can imagine. This was not, this no merit, nothing holy, was not exactly the best fundraising pitch from Bodhidharma. Nothing to hold on to. Nothing to grasp. Really? Yeah. This is reality. The only thing we actually can hold on to, or at least really get involved with, you could say, is suffering. And we all know what that feels like. And then what? Our great founder, Bodhidharma, doesn't even know who he is. Also seems to be the case. Any idea we have of ourselves or others just misses the mark. So there's always a little bit of ambiguity, at least. A little bit of uncertainty. We don't really know. We act when we vote or have an opinion. We make our best guess, but that is not holy, sacred, or superior. Who sits Zazen? Not sure. Don't know. What good is Zazen? Not sure. Don't know. So, right in the middle of ambiguity, there is a lot of spaciousness and real freedom in this just sitting upright, grounded to the earth, always supported in the vastness, breath flowing freely with the autumn wind, sharing life energy. And of course, our Zazen is kind of an all-inclusive resort. Everything is welcome. And it includes our warm bodhisattva vows and the precepts. In our daily lives, this looks something like at the grocery store, in the voting booth. Zazen is a boundless question. It goes something like this. Is there compassion and caring? Am I ready to respond from that place? That's all that's left in some ways, is caring, kindness. So I think at this particular moment, it's a very, very good thing to have Zazen as a refuge, as a resort, as a foundation to meet the moment. We have great teachings of Buddha and Bodhisattva technology, you know, paramitas, precepts, kindness, empathy, joy, all these wonderful teachings to kind of put wind in our sails as we cruise through the ocean of reality. And when we meet heavy waves and rough weather, our practices just stop and pause. It's not always easy to do, but we learn this in Zazen. Just stop and pause and remember, no merit, don't know, not sure. Remember to set aside. I don't say throw away, maybe just set down, you know, just let it rest. All the anticipated outcomes, all the fears, all the opinions. So the more we struggle against reality and are not ready to accept what is, the deeper we sink in the quicksand of suffering. When you accept something, you know it. deeply and intimately. That doesn't necessarily mean you agree with it. But knowing something is our job of not knowing, which means always open, always more curious, always having a little room for ambiguity and uncertainty. So we stop in the name of love. And remember, so remembering is a part of our practice, remembering our vows, remembering our hearts. And something I've been contemplating a little bit lately is the Avatamsaka Sutra, the Flower Adornment Sutra. And these lines in Purifying Practice section, book. It says, when practicing contemplation, when cultivating meditative contemplation, let's say Zazen, Bodhisattva's vow, may all beings, see truth as it is and be forever free of opposition and contention. May they be free of discord and contentiousness. It's not bad. And we have to free the being in ourselves from discord and contentiousness. Of freaking out when we don't get what we want in the way we want it. You know, like being on Amazon, you know, and you're like, that's not quite the right color of green. You know, so let me search and then I can get the one that's the best and the most inexpensive and the best value. And maybe I'll order two, but oh, there's a better one there. This is the kind of thing. You know, now we have AI to even help us, I think, on Amazon. I thought I saw something where it can help, you know, then we can engage, you know, even more intelligence to get exactly things just the way we want it. But that's not our practice. Our practice is oriented towards peace, towards caring, towards love. Loving the clouds, loving love, loving life as it is, moment by moment. Not stuck to one side or both sides or all sides or no sides, not stuck to inside, outside, or in between, as we have chanted. You know, remember the great Joni Mitchell song? Mm-hmm. I've looked at clouds and love and life from both sides now. I think it says, goes something like, I've looked at life from both sides now, from up and down, and still somehow. It's life's illusions, I recall. I really don't know life at all. I really don't know life at all. So Joni might be the granddaughter of Bodhidharma. Not sure. And in this not knowing, there is a nearness or an intimacy that is the heart of the Buddhaverse, which is the heart of reality. So I was thinking of this like laws of physics or some kind of chemical laws, you know. So I thought, oh yeah, there's kind of like laws of Buddhist dynamics. So number one, first law of Buddhist dynamics in this Buddhaverse is compassion. Compassion first. Everything, every being is sacred and worthy of compassion without exception. I don't know if I can do this practice sometimes, but this is what the Buddha taught. second law?
I thought, I'm just making this up, right?
Have to start somewhere. Second law of Buddhist dynamics is boundless ambiguity. No thing to hold on to. Everything is free. This is the great realization of wholeness and connection and harmony. And when these laws are violated, only distress and suffering and madness, as far as I can see. And that's just part of the way things work. When Simone Biles flies through the air in harmony with gravity, with the laws, no problem. But a little misstep, and you fall to the ground. And we get up, try again. So when you feel shaky or freaked out, which are normal human responses to ambiguity, or overwhelmed by the news, by all means, settle down. Stop in the name of harmony and kindness and breathe. Breathe with the earth. And if we stop and pause and remember our vows, remember to practice compassion first. Remember that there's always a little bit of, I'm not quite sure, going on. We become ready to shift our perspectives. You know how hard it is to change a human opinion. Billions of dollars are spent on it. But we learn it for free here. Then we accord with the laws of the Buddhaverse. And I'm sure we will know how to act and how to vote in ways that benefit all beings, including ourselves. So I just want to really appreciate our practice together. This wonderful appearance that we have of Sangha, and I'm very confident in our practice together, wherever it goes. So I just want to thank you all very much and encourage you during this time. And please, anyone who would like to offer anything at this moment, you're welcome to. If you have anything you want to say about your experience with the laws of the Buddhaverse or anything else. So thank you. And David, I think if you want to help me.
Yeah. Yeah, do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
David Ray.
Yes, well, two things. First, thank you. Thank you for those words. And so many ways to talk about this situation that increase pain and fear and so on. And thank you for words that felt to me like Guanyin bubbling up from the South Sea. Just felt tender. And then I have a thought. I guess it's not a question, but a thought about these laws of Buddha dynamics. The thought that maybe in one way compassion and the other, these other Buddha dynamics laws, maybe they're inviolable in the sense that I can only seem to violate the law of compassion, but that the compassion is there, just the way that the laws of thermodynamics are there, whether or not I'm acting in accord with or something is acting it. But that I've heard you say that in the ancient Indian practice teachings that we might not always realize it, but that But that loving kindness, that metta practice is implicit, that just sitting down on the cushion, that love and compassion are already implicit.
Mm. Well, close, if I said that. What I think is that we have to remember that when we sit down, when we think about our intention in moving in any way. That's first, because we, even though it's implicit, if it's not explicit, we can be in trouble. We can be in our own private Idahos, facing the wall, thinking that we've got it all, and we don't have to do anything except just sit. And even though that's true, hopefully we do nothing when we sit, but we don't move a particle of dust. The luminosity of compassion pervades our zazen. So, well, technically speaking, maybe yes, compassion is always there as this pervasive law. I think in case 67, maybe in the Book of Serenity, Buddha's first words allegedly were, oh, I can now see that all human beings, but all beings, let's say, are completely endowed with the wisdom and virtues of the Buddhas, with the compassion of the Buddhas, with the capacity of ambiguity of the Buddhas. But due to false conceptions and preoccupations, they fail to realize it. So our zazen is about realizing it. So thank you for that. And I agree that it's both implicit and needs to be explicit sometimes until, like, we're totally, like, turned into Buddha. And then I think we just go poof and go into that universe. So,
I remember now that you said it was implicit in those ancient texts. You didn't say that it was implicit in the mere fact of sitting down on the cushion.
Ah, yeah. So there were some texts, as I love to say, that predate, like, Dogen's Fukan Zazengi. Actually, the text upon which it is partially based, almost word for word, starts with, before you sit down, remember compassion. And there are many Buddhist instructions for meditation that start with metta, loving kindness, in Theravadin practice, before we just open up to the vastness of zazen. But Dogen didn't write that down, and I think it might not have made it into Fukan Zazengi. Some editor maybe took it out. Or it's possible that this, what I think is that this was just like a given. But the way I'm seeing things these days, it's not always a given in even Zen practice places. So thanks, David, for bringing that up. Somebody else might disprove my theory of Buddha dynamics. Ah, Bodhisattva.
I guess the,
Bo is speaking now.
the sides question, right? I guess since I've practiced, it's been a kind of question for me of, because I am, like, definitely on a side.
Mm-hmm.
And, and I'm just sitting here thinking, that's not right or wrong in some way either. It's mm-hmm. like, because I personally feel like, I'm attracted to the Buddhist precepts, the paramitas, and I feel like, and I think there's a way of, like, complicating the sides that is interesting to me too, but I feel like there are values that, like, mm-hmm. these are values that I want to fight, maybe is not the right word, but also that's the emotion mm-hmm. I feel.
Yeah.
And
protect.
Yeah, and advocate for mm-hmm. and support. Argue for, but also without the what I hear you saying of, like, within the context of this vast ambiguity, which I understand to be, like, Indra's net, which I understand to be the emptiness that is, like, interconnectedness, right, and so forth and so on. So it's like, and I wonder if it's like a way of, you know, like Dogen's thing of like Dharma position. Can I understand like taking a side as, okay, how do you do that? Like, okay, this is where I'm at. And so how do I practice that? But within that context of the values, the, you know, and compassion first, et cetera. I don't know. So I'm just sitting here thinking in a different way than I have about these things. But I am, like, I'm on a side. Like, it's like I'm on a team here a little bit. But also, I know these folks, but it's not opposing any, you know. Maybe it's fighting something that's, like, looming. But, so I'm rambling a little at this point. But, yeah, that's maybe good. I've said one thing or something. Yeah.
You said many things. Words.
Right, exactly.
But they're great words. And I think what you said about, oh, I take a Dharma position, let's say. You know, also in the Genjo Koan, it says, when you know your place where you are, practice occurs.
Mm-hmm.
But compassion first.
Right, yeah.
Room for openness and ambiguity and don't know.
Which even is just a different first, right, than being proposed in some other ways.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. And that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
But when you can take a stand and be totally willing to also let go of that stand,
mm-hmm.
according to the conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Sai had a comment, maybe?
Oh, no.
No? Oh, okay. You're just moving your limbs. Chris, Bodhisattva.
Yeah, I have kind of, you're talking about this, had this sort of SNL skit of Bodhidharma giving a sales pitch for Salesforce.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the answer is, you know, and I don't know who I am. And special guest star, musical guest star Joni Mitchell, I don't really know life at all. So, you know, that's the case. And if Zazen is good for nothing, then how to stay engaged even when it's really scary?
Yeah. Exactly. This is jumping off the 100-foot pole. There is a kind of trust, but also this is not foolishness at all, just means not completely. That there's always a little gap. As far as I can tell, I love science, which is a practice of knowing. You know, if I had another career, I would definitely be in the lab exploring. But the great thing about science and the shifts in our understanding of the world is you have to be ready to give up your hypotheses as much as you want to prove them. The more you want to prove them, maybe the worse it is, because you're not looking at the alternatives. So, and still, you do the experiment. So I think of this all like a big experiment. I think I've got the hypothesis, but we're holding it more lightly. And when we do that, other people sense it, the world senses it, and we relax a little bit, and we're like, oh. But we still have our hypotheses, and we have our stands, and we think we're on a side of something that is beyond sidedness. But still, we live in this world, so we do our best. We give it our best shot. So that doesn't mean just not do anything. Sometimes it does, especially if we know we're fueled by a lot of anxiety and negativity. But when we're sort of relaxed and we're like, well, I actually don't think I agree with that, then there's conversation. I mean, there's people in Buddhist literature, people are arguing all the time. Nagarjuna's, you know, a great example, but it's all over. There's arguing. People are always coming to Buddha with these questions. What do you mean? You know, and didn't always have all the answers. Even our great ancestors don't. But what I believe we actually do when we're settled in the present moment and we're completely willing to give up our answers, then we can stand up in them and sort of go, this is my answer. Is there some,
Eve, I want to get to you. Is there someone online who wanted to say anything? I can't see the screen all that well. Nope.
I'm just checking to see.
Yeah. This is difficult. You know, we're like, oh, Zazen. Yeah, I can sit for 30 minutes. No problem. But this is a hard practice we're doing. You know, if it wasn't so hard, I probably could fill, you know, Madison Square Garden with a bunch of people and have a party and play Joni Mitchell. I mean, but this is a hard practice. And there's not an easy answer. You know how, like, when you're working, like, a math problem or something, and you're like, oh, I just can't quite get how to factor this equation, you know? And then all of a sudden, it's like, ah, you know, this is our practice. Work, 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 work. And we have Sesshin this weekend. We have Rahatsu Sesshin. So we got a lot of time to, like, get into this work. And then once in a while, the cool breeze of reality wafts across. Mm-hmm. David.
Oh, no, I was just happy to hear that phrase from the first case.
Yes.
Thank you.
Case one of the Book of Serenity for all you Dharma nerds. The unique breeze of reality. Can you feel it? Can't feel it if you're clenching too hard.
Oh, Kathy has her hand up.
Ah, Kathy Bodhisattva.
I wanted to thank you, Hogetsu, for that talk. You know, something, as you're talking and people are asking these questions, which are good ones, I was thinking, I've been aware of how stressful this whole thing is. Hmm. And I find myself sometimes all of a sudden just feeling a tightness and a sense of, okay, I gotta take a break. I need a way to come down. And I go back to my breathing, you know, and I find, you know, whether sitting or yoga or walking outdoors, I have to shut off, and come back to my breathing, because it has the capacity to stir up so much tension. And I think that's happening on both sides of the aisle here, and so, yeah, it is good to think about how do we calm it down and continue on to vote our conscience and do the things that we think are moving forward, what's important. And so I've just been aware of Zazen as a self-regulation method lately, which I very much appreciate.
Well, I appreciate your offering that, Kathy, and also I appreciate your distress. Distress is healthy in this situation because there's danger, and it's normal to feel distress, as this tells us something, but how we relate to it. So Kathy is practicing peace with distress, of letting breathe and engaging our breath. You know, our breath, you notice when you're stressed, it becomes shallow and we actually become hypoxic. We lack oxygen because we're not breathing properly when we're tense. So we can start to open. So Zazen is an exploration of that, of regulation of our biology, because we're still pretty reactive critters as humans, you know. Watch our great ancestors, the chimpanzees and bonobos, how they handle it. You know, we're not very far genetically from that. So this practice offers that. And we still have to live and act in this world by our conscience, you know, by being sensitive to our conscience and not numbing it out so much, but allowing it to relax. And my great faith is that we know the way together. And my great joy is that we have Sangha to share this, and that we're not isolated, despite attempts to do that by variety of attention-getting machinery in our culture. So thanks, Kathy. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Well, I want to thank everyone for being here and being together. And our Eno is not feeling well, unfortunately. So she won't be here to make announcements, but why don't we, but I'll make some, and maybe our director, Dylan, will make some. And
yeah, one or two.
And, but what I would like to do is just chant the Bodhisattva vows for now, and then come back and make announcements, and then we'll have a little opportunity to clean our temple, to take care of our space, and to have tea. May our intention equally extend to every being and place with the true merit of Buddha's way. Beings are numberless, we vow to freedom.
Delusions are inexhaustible,
we vow to acronym. Dharma is our boundless, we vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable, we vow to realize it. Beings are numberless, we vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible, we vow to cut through them. Dharma is our boundless, we vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable, we vow to realize it. We vow to realize it.